This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary stranger. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. Investigative reporter John Rappaport of No More Fake News is standing by to talk about fake news, the deep state, the shadow government, Vault Number 7, and much more. What's in the Box, our weekly remote viewing experiment, will be in the second hour of tonight's transmission. And if you want to take part in the remote viewing experiment and score some fabulous Conspiracy Show merchandise, use the hashtag TCS Remote. TCS as in The Conspiracy Show Remote. Hashtag TCS Remote. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, our paranormal researcher extraordinaire, who joins us once a month. Well, she'll drop by also in the second hour, the bottom of the second hour. She, the author of over 60 books on the supernatural. And that's, again, second hour. And then open lines in the second hour as well. We have a busy show, a lot going on. Let me just recap for those of you following along at home. So, John Rappaport coming up for the whole hour. Then second hour, open lines for the first half hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley at the bottom of the hour to take us on home right through till morning. Let me introduce the boys in the band. As always, on the Gibson Flying V guitar, our technical producer, Ian Robertson. And Ian, very quickly, are you gigging around town at all, my fine rockabilly friend?
Quebec City, March 24th.
Quebec City?
Yeah.
Ah, La Belle Province.
Can't announce the venue yet.
You can't?
Coming up.
All right. Did they know about it? Are you just going to show up somewhere with your guitar?
It's booked, but it can't be announced yet.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, make sure that we announce that next week. Yeah. Well, do we have time? Yeah, next week we'll announce it, right?
Sounds good.
Great.
Thanks.
All right. And then we have on the Rickenbacker bass guitar and occasionally the theremin, our story producer, Albert Vinzel. Albert, how are you?
Good. Couldn't be better.
I found Albert at the front door this evening, and he was frozen to the window pane. So I let him in and warmed him up a little bit with some tea. And on the Hammond B3, the intrepid Ryan White, our intern. Ryan, how are you tonight?
Doing excellent, Richard. Thank you.
All right. You two study your remote viewing protocols. I'll come back to you an hour or two when we do our little experiment. The term fake news, I don't have to tell you this. It's being tossed around these days, both by the right, the left, the mainstream media. They're hurling it at the alternative media. The alternative media is hurling it back at the mainstream media. The main reason the mainstream media is targeting the alternative media, particularly YouTubers, people like Paul Joseph Watson, and others in the alternative media, people like Alex Jones, is because they are eating the mainstream media's lunch. They are stealing their audience. people like Jones and Paul Joseph Watson and others, look at their numbers. Bigger than CNN, bigger than MSNBC. So this has the MSM very nervous, and so they're going after the alternative media, their competition, and just branding them with the fake news epithet. However, long before the term fake news became sort of part of the popular culture, John Rappaport started an alternative news website called NoMoreFakeNews.com, and it was dedicated to exposing the collaborating, colluding mainstream media, the propaganda, the partisanship of what is supposed to be an objective fourth estate. And it's none of those things. And so he's been calling them out for at least a decade and a half on NoMoreFakeNews.com, and you can read his weekly dispatches there. But before NoMoreFakeNews.com, John Rappaport was toiling as a freelance investigative reporter. He is the author of three explosive collections available on CD-ROM. We'll tell you how you can get those. The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, and Power Outside the Matrix. He's written articles on politics, health, media, culture for the LA Weekly, Spin Magazine, Stern, Village Voice, Nexus, CBS Health Watch, and other newspapers and magazines in the U.S. and Europe. In 1982, the LA Weekly submitted his name for a Pulitzer Prize for his interview with the president of El Salvador University, where the military had taken over the campus. He's hosted, produced, written radio programs and segments in LA, Las Vegas. He's appeared as a guest on over 200 radio and television programs, including ABC's Nightline, Hard Copy. Since 2000, John has operated largely away from the mainstream because, as he puts it, my research was not friendly to the conventional media. Great pleasure, as always, to have John Rappaport back on the program. John, how are you?
Very good, Richard. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you. Your website, NoMoreFakeNews.com, I think I said about a decade and a half, but it's what, 2000 you started that? Something like that?
2001.
2001. So, I mean, you look like a soothsayer. That's a domain, that's a name that's worth a lot of money, I would say. I'm guessing a lot of people would love to have NoMoreFakeNews.com. But did you ever think you'd live to see the day when the mainstream media is being called out, finally, for their collaboration, partisanship, propaganda, the way you've been doing it for 15 years? But now there's this loud chorus. It's almost like a piling on.
Well, no, I didn't, in a word. I didn't think about it. It just didn't seem to be on the horizon when I started No More Fake News. But then I would say maybe 5 years ago it began to occur to me that the seesaw was tipping in the other direction because there was so much more independent media on the internet, and these people were exposing mainstream news outlets, stories that were patently false in all manner of arenas. And it began to occur to me, you know, something's happening here. This is not just a few individuals. This is not just controlled opposition. This is, you know, these are independent voices, independent writers. And more people are turning away from mainstream news to find out what's really going on. I would also say that the movement that gathered around Ron Paul played a role there.
That's a good point.
Many
yeah.
factors, but that certainly, you know, brought a lot of people to start thinking about deep issues like the Federal Reserve System in the United States and foreign wars being fought. For what reason again? Remind us, what was the evidence? People were waking up in huge numbers, and of course they were being roundly attacked and criticized and so forth, but it's happening.
Well, and here's the other thing. And again, you know, love him or hate him, President Trump now is reading from the same choir sheet because he's part of that chorus. He's not shy about calling out the mainstream media and calling them fake news. He's not shy about pointing a finger at other administrations and saying, you're the war party. You've let us down this. I mean, there's a recklessness that can either be admired or perhaps shunned. But he's gone a long way in kicking that door open as well. I mean, it's a rotten door, but he sort of is really played a big role in putting the boots to that door, wouldn't you say?
No question about it. Absolutely. And I've written about this extensively with the same caveat that you just mentioned. You can hate him, you can love him, you can be on his side, you can be against him. Doesn't matter. On this issue, he stepped into the arena and immediately began attacking major media and shooting from the hip, in a sense, spontaneously, which was something I've never seen in my lifetime for a major presidential candidate and then a president. That's never come close to happening. I mean, this guy just, you know, would turn around and some reporter from CNN would say something, and he would look at him and say, "You're an idiot."
And, yes.
And these people wouldn't know how to respond because it had never happened to them before. You know, it's like somebody who's got such a deep sense of self-entitlement that they presume that nobody is seriously going to challenge them on the basis of lying. And then all of a sudden, here comes this guy Trump, and he does it every single day. And I thought to myself, well, I wonder, once he's elected now, is he going to back off? But he hasn't. If anything, the attacks have grown stronger. And he reflected the feeling of millions and millions and millions of people on various different issues, not only the issues that he brings up, who have, you know, watched the news every night and said to themselves, what is going on here? I'm not getting the straight story. I'm not getting anything from these people. Or read, you know, the great newspapers of the world and say, this is just a bunch of baloney. I'm not getting beneath the issues to find out what's really going on. And so here comes Trump, and he awakens all these people. And, you know, you can't put it back in the box once it's out.
What kind of response have you been getting at nomorefakenews.com since, let's just say, since the last election cycle, when a lot of these, you know, terms that you talk about on your in your blog, that you write about, that we talk about on this show and other shows like it, terms like deep state, terms like shadow government, I heard a broadcaster on a major U.S. cable news network used those two terms in the same sentence. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. Deep state and shadow government. I mean, these terms are filtering into the mainstream consciousness now, finally. But what kind of response are you getting now at nomorefakenews.com, say, the last 18 months?
Accelerated. Much accelerated. I mean, it was already expanding, but now the people who go to the website and sign up for the email list, for example, that is just blowing up. And some of it is coming from interviews like this one. But, you know, it's I think a lot of it is coming just because of the fact that I've been exposing fake news for a long time and people are waking up and catching on. And so it's been a kind of a renaissance for me, personally. And I know for other people, too, who have been doing the same thing. People are waking up. They're seeing that the terms of the argument have changed. You know, instead of well, we think maybe we should adjust the budget. No, we shouldn't. We should spend more. No, we shouldn't. We can't spend more. Oh, yes, we can. You know, these kinds of dilly-dallying back and forth, the usual substance of the news. The whole thing has changed. The whole basis, the foundation of the whole thing has changed.
It has. It has.
Like,
people have had enough of the soaring rhetoric. They just want... They're ready to burn the whole thing down. John, we'll take a timeout, come back, and I want to talk to you about WikiLeaks' latest CIA document dump, and I know you've written about it recently on nomorefakenews.com. We'll do that. Stay with us here on The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett.
Take a look around. What do you really see? This is where you can tell all about it. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. In a democracy, we elect officials so we can sleep at night. So why are you up? 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Welcome back. John Rappaport stays with us. Just a reminder, at the top of the hour, open lines. And you can help steer the ship and take it just about anywhere you want to go. John Rappaport, of course, nomorefakenews.com, and the author of three explosive collections available on CD-ROM. These are just, they're dense, just like a neutron star. You know, one teaspoon weighs more than... I don't know. That's enough of the analogy. But tell us about The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, Power Outside the Matrix, John. The content, and how do people get a hold of them?
Well, getting a hold of them is just by going to nomorefakenews.com. Yes, they are large, large collections. And it segues in from what we were talking about before the break. If, in fact, we have been looking at reality that has been presented to us, false reality, for a long, long time on this planet, presented to us by various elites and secret societies and people behind the curtain and so on, shadow governments, then we can do one of two things. We can either acquiesce in that and say, okay, well, that's reality. This is what I see. This is what I hear. Or we can say, no, this reality was invented in order to entrap us, and I can invent a better reality myself. I have the potential within me to do that. And in a nutshell, that's the nexus point of all these three collections. What is the potential of the individual human being, and how has that been buried and forgotten and suppressed and written over by history, and so on and so forth? The individual, the power of the individual to get beyond this matrix of false invented reality on every level, not just political reality, not just economic reality, but spiritual reality as well. So when I started No More Fake News, that was my twin goal, along with exposing scandals and frauds and so forth, and I've been at that for a very long time. So No More Fake News, you'll get complete descriptions of what these collections are, and you can order them if you are interested.
You talk about the Matrix and creating or manufacturing reality. And here's a perfect example. In fact, my good friends who are joining us on the YouTube stream or on the chat, the live chat, are talking about, you know, the Russian story. And what about the Russian story? And this is a perfect example of what you sort of unpack in your Matrix series. Here we have a colluding, collaborating corporate mainstream media. They come up with this notion that the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, Trump is the Siberian candidate, and absolutely no evidence. Even the former head of Intel, James Clapper, said there's no evidence. The House Intel Committee says there's no evidence. And yet the narrative persists. And then we have this CIA documents dump courtesy of our friends at WikiLeaks, where, and perhaps the most damning piece of information that just came out in Vault Number 7, they're calling it, the CIA's use of other nations' hacking tools in order to give the impression that when the CIA hacks into secret areas, it looks like other nations did the hacking. And you wrote about this recently on your blog on nomorefakenews.com. So how does the CIA do this, first of all? And secondly, what does this mean with respect to claims that the Russians hacked the election? I ask somewhat rhetorically.
Yes, indeedy. Well, what it means is that the CIA has stolen, appropriated, gotten their hands on methods, tools, equipment, et cetera, that are used by other nations' governments to do hacking. And the reason for getting a hold of this is because the CIA, like any big intelligence agency, lives through deception. So when they hack, they want to make it appear as if it's not me, it's those guys over there. You can see the fingerprints that are left here by the hacking belong to other nation governments, for example, Russia. So it would be child's play for the CIA to do the hacking themselves or, quote, investigate the hacking and come up with this statement, yes, we found the fingerprints of the Russians all over this and so forth. Well, you, the CIA, have the equipment and the means and the methods to make it look that way. These agencies are in the business of deception. That's what they do. That's what they do every day. And part of that deception is making it appear that they didn't do anything, but somebody else did, when they want that to be the story of the day, when they want to leak that to the media, when they want to leak it to the Washington Post. And another relevant story, which I hope many people are aware of by now, is that the owner of the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos, who is the owner of Amazon, has a $600 million contract with the CIA through Amazon cloud computing services that Amazon is providing to the CIA, with more contract money undoubtedly in the offing.
That's right, right.
And so there you have, you know, they're joined at the hip. Anything the CIA wants published in the Washington Post is a picnic on a Sunday in the park.
And yet, John, I don't recall ever seeing the Washington Post preface any of their coverage on the CIA with that caveat that the Washington Post's owner has a $600 million contract to build a cloud for data management for the CIA. I've never read that in that newspaper.
That's right, and you never will. And even more damning in a way is we haven't seen any other significant major media coverage of that story either. So it isn't just the Washington Post that doesn't print the disclaimer. The New York Times, CNN, CBS, what have you, the LA Times, they're not covering this incredible conflict of interest at the Washington Post either, because they don't do that. Because in their business, they don't go on the attack against their allies in the major media. And so that, as much as anything, shows the amount of collusion that exists between and among these major news outlets. They just let that story hopefully die and go away, and it's not going to go away.
Staying with the Russian theme, because the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming.
Yes.
The Washington Post also ran with a number of stories that were totally false. One of them had to do with the Russians hacking one of the power grids in New England. They said that had Vladimir Putin's fingerprints all over it. That was fairly quickly dismissed, but there was no retraction that I can recall, and I've looked for it. I may be mistaken, but I don't think there was a retraction from the Washington Post on that one. And there are some other instances I'm trying to remember. You may have some as well. That is fake news, and then you can get something wrong. People get things wrong. Journalists get things wrong. But you're supposed to retract. You're supposed to, fall on bended knee and say, "Sorry, we screwed up. These are the facts. We misrepresented the facts, or we got it wrong."
Yes, and you haven't seen that, and you haven't seen it really debunked as it should have been by other major outlets either. The Russian story just keeps on going. It kept on going with Michael Flynn. Oh, he talked to a Russian. As if, nobody else has ever done that. No senators, no congressmen, no people inside the government, no political candidates. I mean, this happens all the time.
Well, you mentioned Flynn.
It doesn't signify collusion or some sort of agenda that's being carried out between Trump and the Russians. It signifies nothing of the sort.
What it signifies,
a major distraction and an attempt to again not lose the election that they already lost.
Well, here's something interesting. And this gets around to Trump's 3 a.m. tweet about the Trump Tower being wiretapped by the Obama administration, and I think that was pretty reckless to say that without, maybe that was short form for the Obama Department, Justice Department. However, here's the smoking gun, perhaps, and that is, where was Michael Flynn when he was communicating? And he should have been. This was his. When you're in transition, it's commonplace for an incoming administration in the transition period to reach out to their counterparts. There was certainly nothing illegal or untoward about that. I think he panicked, and I think Trump panicked. But where was Flynn when he was having this conversation with his counterpart? In the Trump Tower.
Mm-hmm.
So there must have been a tap.
Absolutely. You don't get that information any other way. And then there was also a transcript.
Yes.
So there was some kind of a tap going on, or wiretapping, surveillance, that this sort of thing. That story has not been really covered at all as well. So what we're looking at here is just an absolute barrage of fake news on top of fake news that really accelerated right after the election when Trump won. It was like, okay, we the major media can't deal with the fact that we got it completely wrong, our prediction. And on top of that, we supported Hillary Clinton from the beginning and did everything we could to defame Trump, and we still lost. And we're sitting here with egg all over our faces. That's not going to work for us. We have to deflect attention onto something else. We have to find a scapegoat. We have to blame somebody other than ourselves. And there is sweat, panic, desperation in all of this on the part of major media to try to shift the focus of the story, explain the whole thing away. Well, the reason we got the election so wrong was because we didn't know that Vladimir Putin, while he was sitting there sipping his vodka, was actually somehow corrupting the election and handing it to Donald Trump, which, is a fairy tale invented on the spur of the moment one night when people were in a panic. And then, okay, now we need to get some leaks from the CIA, and we need to build this story, and we need to take it as far as we can. And that's what they've been doing.
I have no doubt that the Russians, try to influence elections. This is what nations do. The United States, during Barack Obama's administration, intervened in the Israeli election. They hired consulting firms. They poured millions of dollars into to unseat Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, that was blatant, and yet that wasn't recorded. That wasn't reported, rather. So these things go on. But as you say, where is the evidence? There is none. And yet the narrative continues. It's the story that won't die. I'm wondering, though, if there is something else behind this. And that is, we were talking about the deep state. Part of that is the war party, which is, it has no allegiance to either party. Its raison d'etre is perpetual war, a clash of civilization. The same party that was trying to prevent Eisenhower from meeting with Khrushchev. Perhaps that was what Oswald was doing in Russia. He gave the code so that they could shoot down the U-2. Down goes Gary Francis Powers. Huge embarrassment. The meeting between Eisenhower and Khrushchev is called off. I think there's a remnant of that still at work here that does not want Trump to meet with Putin. They didn't want Nixon to meet with Brezhnev. They didn't want Reagan to meet with Gorbachev, and it's happening all over again. What do you think?
Yes. I would say there are two things there. One is exactly as you're saying, the war party. Because, and again, doesn't matter what you think of Trump, just remember what he was talking about as a clue to what he might have been planning and is planning to do. He said, these wars are insane. We don't need to fight these wars. We don't want to fight these wars. We just want to come home and make America strong. That's what the job should be. That's it. Other people who have their own problems are eventually going to have to solve those problems. Well, you know, that's like waving a silver cross in front of a vampire.
It's so true. I got to take a time out, John. It's so true. And the crazy thing is, this is the exact same thing Bernie Sanders was talking about. Actually, he and Trump saw eye to eye on that. We will continue our conversation with the great John Rappaport, nomorefakenews.com. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Poking holes in the darkness. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To see the light, call Richard now at 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Investigative reporter John Rappaport with us, nomorefakenews.com, nomorefakenews.com. And you can order his three CD-ROM collections there, The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, and Power Outside the Matrix. And if you're interested in playing catch-up in this crazy topsy-turvy world and what's quickly becoming mainstream, and you want to learn what people like John have been on about for the last three decades or more, it's all there. These collections, you've got hundreds and hundreds of documents. Some of these came to you from a whistleblower, did they not?
Yes, well, these are interviews, actually, with not exactly a whistleblower because he remained in the shadows, but he was a propaganda operative, retired, who participated in some of the biggest frauds and hoaxes of the 20th century, I would say, second half. And I extensively interviewed him many, many, many times, and it was really enlightening, to say the least. So, you know, before the break, we started to get into things that Trump was talking about that put the deep state into a panic. And the other thing he was talking about, of course, was globalism.
Yes.
And in the Matrix series, I take up that issue at a much deeper level than the news takes up that issue. In other words, we're talking about control of the planet on every level. But Trump was saying something very simple, and just his saying it started to bring many people on board. Whether or not he was going to do anything about it, there was no modern president who was campaigning on the basis of we have to stop globalism. I mean, that's unheard of, absolutely.
Yes. It's Trump doesn't know the meaning of the term that which shall remain nameless. He names things.
Right.
He calls things what they are that we've been thinking about. Globalism. I mean, when we talk about that on the air all the time, you write about it all the time, Alex Jones and so forth, for years and years and years, never before has a public official called them out by name.
Exactly. And he went right for the throat, in a sense. He started talking about the free trade treaties and how they are destroying and have been destroying the economy of the country because they throw untold numbers of people out of good jobs when these corporations suddenly close down their factories in America. Bernie Sanders himself said 60,000 factories have closed down in America in the last 15 years. 60,000 factories. So where do these jobs go? They go overseas. The factories reopen, the corporations reopen them, slave labor wages, no environmental rules or conditions. They make the products for pennies. They ship them back to the United States and sell them and pay no tariffs. They pay no penalty, no tax, no anything for bringing these products back into the country. Well, you go back to the founders. They're talking about tariffs all the time. They're talking about the necessity of having protective tariffs to protect companies inside the United States. But they didn't even conceive of a time when you would have all these predatory corporations shutting down their plants in the home country and moving them thousands of miles away and never paying tariffs to bring the products back in and sell them here. So what Trump was saying is, well, we're going to stop all that. That's never going to happen again. We don't care about these stupid trade treaties. We're going to renegotiate everything. And if we want to trade with a nation, we'll sit down and we'll work something out. It's just called business. It's not that difficult to do if you want to defend America. And this just, you know, panic again, huge amount of panic within the globalist elite, the Rockefeller globalists, that this guy might get elected president, and who knows, he might actually try to do this and turn the whole thing around. So that's another reason why he and what he's saying and the people who support what he's saying, regardless of whether they support him, have to be shut down some way or another. Trump has to be discredited. He has to be driven out of office. That's their entire program.
And this is where the shadow government comes in, because there is almost a permanent bureaucratic class in Washington. They're in the State Department. They're in the Department of Justice. And they really, they control the narrative. It reminds me of a quote that was attributed to Vladimir Lenin when he started to realize that he wasn't really in charge of the revolution. He said something to the effect that my hands are on the steering wheel, but I really don't have control of the car. And that speaks to, I think, what Trump, the situation Trump is finding himself in. He'd like to take the country this way, but in order to do that, he's got to drag this permanent bureaucracy with him, and they're trying to drag it in the exact opposite direction, or they're trying to keep it exactly where it is, more like it.
Exactly. It's a very, very difficult thing. There are a numerous number of infiltrators at every level who have this globalist agenda. Infiltrators in government who have been sitting behind desks for, in some cases, decades, and they have their minions, and they have their connections, and so on and so forth. And so in order to change all of that, people have to understand driving America into the ground, and not just America, but I mean many countries that show any technological progress or industrial power and so forth, that operation has been ongoing at least since the end of World War II, and really before the World War II.
Okay, John, I got to jump in here.
That is unbelievable.
Got to take a quick time out. Back with John Rappaport. Stay with us.
Different views make great conversation. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard live, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Question everything. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
And just a reminder, coming up at the top of the hour, open lines, and then that'll be followed by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and of course we'll squeeze in our What's in the Box remote viewing experiment as well. If you'd like to participate in that, use the hashtag TCSRemote. John Rappaport from No More Fake News stays with us for a while yet. John, a number of organizations, including Facebook, have taken it upon themselves like the teacher leaves the classroom, they're going to take names, and they're going to put the list together. They're going to decide who the fake news organizations are. I'm wondering, have you found yourself on any of those lists?
Not yet. But I see what their strategy is, of course. What's really happened here is that major media have figured out, and the government has figured out, that social media is bigger than major news media. And so if they want help in censorship, they've got to go to Facebook, they've got to go to Twitter, they've got to go to YouTube, they've got to go to Google. And that's what they're doing. They're saying, look, we need your help. You have to start censoring. You have to start carving away what we tell you is fake news, and don't let it be posted, don't let it be spread, because otherwise there's no way we can stop it, which is true. You know, I mean, somebody can put up a YouTube video, and that can get more looks than a major story in any newspaper in the world on a given day. So in order to make this censorship thing happen, which is what major media, in collusion with government globalists and so forth, where do they go? They got to go to social media. They've got to somehow try to put the clamps in, and that's what we're seeing now.
I'm guessing if you ended up on one of those fake news lists, you'd sort of wear it as a badge of honor, as would I.
Of course, yeah, sure. You know, they have nothing to say of any substance. All they want to say is, we know the truth. We, the major media, must vet the truth and decide what it is, digest it, and then we give it to you. That's where you get your news. That's the only way that news actually works. In fact, there was somebody at CNN a while ago talking about the WikiLeaks dump of Hillary Clinton or DNC, Democratic National Committee, emails. And he said straight away, it's illegal for the public to read these emails that have been leaked.
I remember that.
Only
yes.
We, the press, can read them. And then we decide what's news and we give it to you. And that's the way you get the news. Well, you know, this guy, of course, was preposterous, but he just doesn't get it. People don't care. They don't care what CNN has to say. They're getting their news wherever they're getting it from.
That's true. CNN, they're becoming increasingly irrelevant, along with MSNBC. There was the co-host on Morning Joe on MSNBC, who is the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, actually, and blatantly, I mean, they're not even shy about it, said, was worried that Trump was controlling the narrative and was influencing people on how to think. And she basically said, that's our job, to tell people how to think. Did you see that clip?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. You know, we control how you think. That's our job. I mean, they're coming out and saying things before they can stop themselves because, as I say, they're in a panic. So certain things leak out from their mouths that ordinarily they would never put on the air. These kinds of spontaneous comments like, well, we're the ones who are supposed to control what you think. Don't you understand that? And then you stop and say, well, what did she just say? What was that? Oh, I see. She's saying that they're involved in a massive day-to-day mind control program over the public. That's what she's saying. And they're supposed to be running the program, and she's afraid that somebody else might be running the program or that the program itself is falling apart. Once you understand that, then now, you know, the mask comes off. Now you see the truth.
John, one of the areas that you have really been hammering away at, and this speaks to your vast experience as an investigative medical reporter, is on the CDC. What's new in that realm? What are you covering? What are you interested in right now? Coming out of the Centers for Disease Control, I know you were all over the whistleblower who came out about the vaccines and so forth. What's the latest?
Well, I think the latest could be coming from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. if, in fact, Trump does give the green light for an intensive investigation of vaccine safety, which Kennedy says is going to happen and that he's going to lead it. We'll see. But statements that Kennedy has been making and writing are quite incredible. He knows what's going on at the CDC. He's saying basically, look, they're operating as a for-profit company. They buy and sell huge amounts of vaccine every year, $3 to $4 billion worth. And in fact, from another source, I found the statistic that roughly 50% of the vaccines that children get in America come from the CDC, which most people don't realize. They don't understand. The CDC is a government agency, but it's also operating as a for-profit company. So how can they, the CDC, talk about conflict of interest, have a science division which does studies on vaccine safety? You know, this is preposterous, because when would the CDC ever say under any conditions that a vaccine wasn't safe? That's on their vaccine recommended schedule, because they're buying that vaccine and they're selling it in huge quantities. So you're never going to hear a statement out of them about safety that you could trust or believe in. Kennedy understands all this. He's called them out for it. He's called them out for an intrinsic conflict of interest that can't be resolved. So if this moves forward in some way, this investigation and a report, it could be quite explosive.
And again, he met with Trump, I think just after the inauguration.
That's right.
And is pushing for another congressional hearing on the safety and efficacy of vaccines. One of the key things, I mean, and you were all over the CDC whistleblower, Dr. Thompson, that whole story, Dr. William Thompson, and how through, was it Brian Smith, it came out that Thompson admitted that he, this report on the safety of certain vaccines, the data was fudged, the connection between this vaccine and autism, the data was fudged. I'm guessing that one of the things Robert Kennedy Jr. would like to see would be for Dr. William Thompson and others at the CDC to be subpoenaed. Do you think that's going to happen?
Boy, I hope so. I don't know. But that's what is required. Get Thompson there under oath to testify. He said through his lawyer that he will. He's not going to talk to reporters, but he said that he would cooperate with the federal government. And to me, that means he would be willing to testify under oath. So it could go in that direction. The encouraging thing to me about Kennedy is that right now he has enough information to convince any person with a few active brain cells that the CDC is terminally corrupt. Regardless of who he gets up there under oath to testify or how many lies these people tell, he already understands enough of the story so that he can do great damage to a terminally corrupt government agency, which is what I hope is going to happen here.
Do you think that Kennedy had Trump watch Vaxxed, the documentary?
I don't know. My feeling is that Trump probably saw it. Trump has significant knowledge in this area, more than people realize. He isn't just shooting from the hip when he said during the campaign, yeah, something's going on with these vaccines, and parents see it, they know it, the kid is fine, gets a shot, and all of a sudden, he's never the same again. It's terrible, and we have to do something about it. That's pretty much what he said during the campaign. But from sources of mine, it's clear to me that he has spoken with people who are very knowledgeable about the truth about vaccines, because he's interested. He's been interested for a long time. So in that area, I would say that he knows enough of the story to know that he really should forward this investigation.
Anything else on the horizon that we what's your next dispatch, your next blog on nomorefakenews.com concern?
Well, let's see. So many things here. I'm going to be looking a little bit into academia, which I do from time to time, colleges, brainwashing at colleges, in the curriculum, with the professors. I wrote a piece not long ago quoting a statistic, 25% of all college students last year were either diagnosed with a mental disorder or treated for a mental disorder. 25%.
That's alarming. That
colleges
is alarming.
Have become psychiatric clinics.
Hmm. We had Scott Greer on the program. Scott Greer was on with us recently. No campus for white men. Talking about what is going on in the college campuses and how they have become indoctrination camps. It frightens me because they're churning out these people that will assume positions of power and influence. They will become program directors, news editors, city councilors, and they hate Western values and they hate free speech.
Absolutely. They have no tolerance for free speech whatsoever. It's a madhouse. It's developing more and more into a crazed madhouse. And behind it, psychiatry is playing a major part with its toxic drugs, diagnoses, and so forth. That is one of the key hidden factors in this whole insanity that's going on.
You know what parents need to do? They need to seriously think about sending their kids off to schools like Berkeley and many others. It's really now more than ever so crucial to know what's going on in the classrooms. Students who attempt to videotape some of these professors that are going off on some Marxist-Leninist tirade, and then they demand that the student be punished for videotaping. I mean, these are taxpayer-funded colleges. We need to know what's going on in the classroom, but what they really need is, the antidote to this indoctrination is for people to go to nomorefakenews.com and purchase your Matrix series of CD-ROMs. John, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you, Richard. It's been great.
John Rappaport, nomorefakenews.com. Bookmark it. visit often. Open lines when we come back. Rosemary Ellen Guiley and What's in the Box. My website, strangeplanet.ca. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. And as always, follow the truth.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Well, thank you for inviting me into your home, long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. A special hello to all of you listening in on our flagship station, Zoomer Radio, here in the Liberty Village neighborhood of Toronto. Hi to all of you picking us up on one of our affiliate stations along the network, the podcast, of course, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn.com, iTunes, and TalkZone.com. Those of you who take the show with you wherever you go on your mobile device through the apps, either the Zoomer Radio app or the Conspiracy Show app, both fabulous and both free downloads. And, of course, those of you joining us on the live YouTube stream, appreciate that. And please take a moment and click on the subscribe button there. Again, we've set a goal of 10,000 subs for 2017, and you are the only ones that can help us reach that. And of course, we are streaming live on YouTube tonight, and all of you who have joined the live chat as well on YouTube, welcome to all of you. It's always great to have you. We recognize some names there who come by every week, and we'd like to get some more people joining in on the chat. And so, however you're listening, wherever you're listening, of course, I bid thee the warmest of welcomes, and I thank you for your fine company. And speaking of company, we've got the usual gang here assembled. Ian Robertson on the other side of the glass, twisting the knobs and the dials and answering the phones as we gear up for our open line segment. Albert Vinzel, of course, my story producer, erstwhile remote viewer, and Ryan White, intern who helps us out produce the feature Strange Planets. And now that I have you all assembled here in the studio, I want, and all of you listening at home, I want you to direct your attention to the cigar box to my left, sitting on the desk here in studio at 70 Jefferson Avenue. I'm giving you the coordinates. This is important. These are the protocols of remote viewing. Isn't that right, Albert?
Yep,
he heard it from the man himself. 70 Jefferson Avenue, Liberty Village of Toronto. And I want you to allow the contents of this box to form in your mind. Don't guess. Allow the shape to form in your mind, the color, the texture. Once it begins to form in your mind, then you can step back and say, well, what is that? This is our remote viewing experiment. We're going to go around the horn here in just a second. But for all of you who want to participate at home, use the hashtag. You can tweet me. Use the hashtag TCS Remote. That's TCS as in The Conspiracy Show. TCS Remote. And whoever comes closest, we'll set you up with some fabulous Conspiracy Show merchandise. Incidentally, you can check out the online store at theconspiracyshow.com, theconspiracyshow.com, the online store. There's mugs, T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, phone cases. I don't care if you've got an iPhone 6, a 4, an Android. We've got that covered for you. Theconspiracyshow.com, the online store. All right, let's go around the horn quickly before we get into our open line segment. Let's begin with Albert Vinzel. What's in the box, Albert?
Okay, I get yellow and the number 7, so I guess a banana.
All right.
Could be way off.
All right, and Ryan?
I see something very dry, like maybe an old starfish or a fossil.
Wow. Something very dry, like Albert's sense of humor. A fossil? Or a starfish. Interesting. And then finally, to our rockabilly friend, Ian Robertson, on the other side of the glass. What's in the box, Ian?
I'm seeing something green.
Into the mic. I can't hear you, buddy.
I'm seeing something green, maybe like a plant of some sort. Not sure.
Some vegetable matter from
something,
Ian.
Something green.
All right. We will do the reveal at the bottom of the hour. And again, if you'd like to participate in our remote viewing experiment, use the hashtag, send out the tweet, hashtag TCS remote. All right, let's open up the phone lines. And I see we've done that, and we've got a full board of lines. Let me just give out the numbers in case if someone drops off, jump on quick at 416-360-0740, 416-360-0740. That's for the greater Toronto area. And then toll free from just about anywhere, 1-866-740-4740. 866-740-4740. All righty then. Let's launch into our open lines. And just a reminder, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. All right, we have Hunter checking in from my own hometown, Brantford, Ontario. Hello, Hunter.
Good morning, Richard.
How are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I won't keep you long on this, hopefully. A few years back ago, I saw something tacked onto a telephone pole in this big city here. Something about, a meeting type thing to talk about UFOs or whatever. And I thought in Brantford, I mean, you know, what are they doing, setting a trap for all us crazies or what?
Setting a trap.
So I never heard anything further about it or anything like that. But
well, that may have been the Alien Cosmic Expo, which took place in Brantford last summer.
No, it was before that. It was like a year or two before that.
Well, I think they had one there the year before as well.
Okay. So what I want to know, if you know anything, is I did hear something over the radio one night. Somebody from, I think, southwestern United States alluded to whatever it was that purportedly happened here, and I've not heard anything about it, but it sounded like it was some kind of a big deal.
Well, the Alien Cosmic Expo, and I participated in last year. I moderated a panel. And they have they have a lot of great speakers. The Honorable Paul Hellyer spoke last year. Richard Dolan, Stanton Friedman was there. I mean, it was a veritable who's who of ufology at the I'm trying to think of the hotel there just off of Wayne Gretzky Parkway. It used to be the Best Western. And they held it there a few years. And they're moving it to Toronto this year, I think, out near the airport. But the Alien Cosmic Expo has been running in Brantford for maybe 3 or 4 years now.
So, do you know what it is that occurred here in the last little while that's getting everybody jumping up and down about what happened in Brantford? Because I never heard anything about it.
Are you talking about a specific sighting of a UFO?
Yeah, something
like
that.
Sighting. Oh. No.
Okay.
And I've been home to Brantford recently, and I didn't see anything in the good old Brantford Expositor, or the explosion, as we used to call it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I only knew one Hunter my entire life in Brantford, and he went to Woodman Drive Public School. You wouldn't be the same Hunter, would you?
No.
You didn't go there? All right.
Okay, well, thanks for your time, Richard.
My pleasure.
If you do unearth anything about it, could you mention it over the air sometime or whatever?
Certainly I will, and I hope you'll call again. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right.
Okay.
Brainwashed is the comment that Razia wants to speak about here in Toronto. Hey, Razia, welcome.
Hey. Yeah, I love your show. I listen to it every Sunday.
Thank you.
But I was thinking one day about Judaism. I have a very good friend for 40 years. She's
Hold on.
Jewish.
Let me. Can I ask you to do something for me? Razia, can I ask you to do something for me? You need to turn your radio off because we're getting an echo here, okay?
Okay.
There we go. That's better. All right. You have a friend.
Yeah. So I was thinking, wondering why David was the king and not Solomon. Because Solomon was noted for his justice, whereas David broke the first commandment, and also another commandment.
Oh, yes.
Thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wives or chattel, you know. And you said word for word what I had been thinking. And you had a guest with you who said that, somebody can brainwash you. And I've been told, in the only communication I get, this started 2 years ago when I bought a stereo for the first time and started listening to music. And many times somebody has told me, you've been hypnotized, you've been brainwashed. And I kept thinking, what are they talking about here? It can't be me. But you said word for word that day what I was thinking. And then Miss Giley came one day, I think last time, not before that. She came on the show, and I have a picture of the Sai Baba. And she said that Sai Baba is one of those people who are, like, sacred, you know. And I'm, like, you've been giving me hints as to what's going on in my life. It's so bizarre that it will take a lot of time to tell you.
Well, it sounds like we're on the same wavelength, Risa.
No, listen.
Yes.
You also got a guest that said that he had a computer chip inserted into his body, and he never knew it for 5 years. That he was being programmed. And I have a lump on my wrist, not just above my wrist, on my palm, on the other side, where the wrist, not the wrist side, the other side, on the palm, on the opposite side, a big lump.
All right, well,
and
you might want to get...
At first I thought I must have banged my hand on something.
Well, you may want to get that checked out, Razia. I gotta fly here because we're heading into a break. Get that x-ray, find out what's going on there. Even if it's not a chip, could be something you might want to have taken care of. Nevertheless, thank you for checking in, Razia, and I hope you'll call again. Back with more of your calls, questions, comments, ask me anything here on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Shaking the world and seeing what falls. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. The truth will set you free, but first, it will really tick you off. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Rosemary Ellen Giley, our paranormal news investigator, researcher, joins us at the bottom of the hour. Let's check in with Earl in Oakville. Earl, good evening, good morning. Hi there.
I wonder what the spider and the snake think of all this. You know what I mean?
The spiders and the snakes.
The spider and the snake. The serpent and the god.
Ah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Well, you fill me in. What are you talking
about? Well, many years ago when I was at college, I left my coffee on the table, and I went to the washroom, and I came back, and I drank my coffee, and I could not breathe. I stopped breathing, and I felt the spider inside me crawling, and I started breathing a few seconds later. So I said to myself, this has got to be a bloody miracle, for crying out loud. And so, but that's a long story. I don't want to bore you anymore with that, but I want to get to the fake news. Many years ago, I was watching the news, and a guy on the television set, the anchorman, said, you know, this is a show we're putting on. It's to entertain you. And I was wondering what he was talking about. So I was at Union Station one day, and there was a strike going on. And what they did was they organized all the people that were on strike in a line, and they filmed it. They actually were directing it. So I was saying to myself, holy smokes, they're setting this up. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yes, it's all a show. Yes, well, news, it's called, it's news entertainment, right.
You know what
Sure.
I mean? Okay, Rich, it's been nice talking to you, pal. You take
Likewise.
Care of yourself, okay?
Thank you, Earl. Appreciate
okay,
that. All right, let's check in with our media scientist friend, Nelson Fall, here in Toronto. Nelson, good evening.
How are you doing tonight, Richard?
I am just top drawer, thank you.
That's good. Last time we spoke, we said we'd take a look at a synopsis of a figure-ground relationship with the art of the deal and all that that represents as figure.
What do you mean by what it, hang on, Nelson. What do you mean by what it represents as figure? You have to explain that, what that means.
Well, the figure ground, art of the deal is figure, seven-year peace pact, the biblical prophecy of the seven-year peace pact as the hidden ground.
Okay.
So the events that we're watching, you can see are falling into line with the mini prophecy and big prophecy.
Meaning that a peace with Russia, then perhaps peace with peace in the Middle East, which ushers in the seven-year peace, ushers in the tribulation. So you're talking about biblical prophecy here.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's growing. It you can't ignore it. I mean, Netanyahu was on the other day, and in the last 2 months, he's made it clear that he's in negotiations with other Arab states to recognize Israel and its right to exist, which is part of a peace pact. And in return, the Israelis are going to recognize a Palestinian state. Then Jerusalem's given over into the hands of the international city folks, which is the Vatican, which they got in Oslo anyway. It's mentioned in Oslo. And in return, the Temple Mount and is a part of the Temple Mount is given for the temple for the Jews to rebuild.
Right. But you mentioned The Art of the Deal, President Trump's book. So are you suggesting that he's going to facilitate these trade deals?
We've got one of the biggest deals looming on the horizon of all time, a seven-year peace pact between the Jews and the Arabs, and up pops a man who's an expert on making deals.
So are you suggesting, Nelson, then, that Donald Trump is the Antichrist?
No, he's not the Antichrist. He'd be an agent of Gabriel the Angel. He's a judge like Samson. His power is in his hair.
Right. Yes, but isn't the Antichrist the one that's supposed
to... He's a judge. He's not the Antichrist.
Okay.
He's a catalyst to put the peace pact deal together, which seems he's doing.
Okay, but I thought, and you're a very wise and sage student of the Bible, and I learn a lot from you about the Bible, but I thought that the Antichrist is the one who is going to cobble together this false peace deal.
Let's keep one thing in mind. The Bible makes it very clear that there have been many Antichrists. So there's lots of little Antichrists, and there's a capital A, last Antichrist at the end time. So if you want to find out about the big A, there's a lot of little A's, and they're all out there. Antiochus Epiphanes is one who goes in. He was an Antichrist.
All right. But
we've had many small antichrists, as the Bible says, using small A.
Right.
There's a last one antichrist, but it certainly isn't Donald Trump.
No, I didn't think I would hear that from your quarters.
Last Trump is a judge, power of Samson, like Samson, it powers in his hair. He's a judge who judges. So we've got really in the White House a guy, he's in the White House and he's also in the Supreme Court. He's got judgment powers.
All right. So, you and I will put that show together and we'll do it.
Yeah, it's interesting because the mini prophecy is there and starting to be obvious to just the internet surfer who looks into these stories and looks for the dots.
My feeling is that Trump is going to run into, we've already seen the opposition he's running into by trying to bring about sort of a detente. I know we're not officially in a Cold War, but to smooth things over with Russia, we saw what happened to Eisenhower and Kennedy and Nixon when they tried to do the same thing. The war party, this deep state, does not want the United States to make peace with Russia, and I'm kind of concerned about what may happen.
There's going to be wars and rumors of wars. See that you not be worried. The end is not yet. So you're going to have the wars and the rumors of wars and terrorism, as it says in the book of Deuteronomy, if you don't live according to the natural, the the divine laws, you're going to suffer penalties and cursing and things, which is what we're under. It's called Jacob's trouble.
What do you make of the comparisons of Trump and Cyrus, King Cyrus from the Book of Daniel?
Yeah, that's out there as a thought, but biblical scholars see him more as a reflection of I won't go into details now, but one of the kings of Israel, one of the kings of the house of Israel. So he there's a number of different kings, Joash and some others who wasn't Joash, but. Off the top of my head, I don't have it in front of me, but it's one of the first kings he's been compared to, which is more likely rather than Cyrus, who was not, he was a Gentile, so to speak. He was not of the house of Israel.
No, he wasn't, but he did help build a wall around Jerusalem, and rumor has it he got someone else to pay for it. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but Nelson, always a pleasure.
Terrific, Richard, and once again, keep up the great work. This is a great time to be doing radio and to be in the ability to pat yourself on the back for having lots of time long ago stuck your neck out and said, hey, there's some fake news out there, and they're very prime time people, and you were right, we were right, so it's important to not forget.
All right, there you go. Nelson Thal. You too, likewise. Let's see. Connor is checking in from Louisiana. Hey, Connor, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. How are you picking us up tonight?
Oh, this is great. I can hear you very well. Also, please excuse my southern drawl. It's a lot worse on the phone.
Excuse it. I love it.
You
come
like
on.
It.
No apologies needed.
I like that a lot.
Now, but how are you hearing the program? Are you listening to us? How are you picking us up?
I just found you on a whim about an hour ago. I was on Reddit, and I was looking for really good conspiracy podcasts because I've always been drawn to conspiracy podcasts.
So are you streaming us online, or are you listening to through the app? Or how are you?
Yes, I was listening to YouTube. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're on the YouTube stream. Great. All right. I hope you'll subscribe before you leave. Now.
I already did.
Terrific. Great to have you aboard, Connor. What's on your mind?
Okay. Well, so my question was, what propaganda do you think we're being influenced by? That's maybe not necessarily as blatant as the ones we already know, like CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News.
You're looking for other programs that are.
What things are
propagating fake news?
Yes, I guess my question is, like, what things are we being influenced by to shift public opinion that's not just as clear as watching the news?
Right. Like, well, it's so pervasive. It clearly starts in the schools.
Right.
And I guess if we wanted to really define what we're talking about here in very stark black and white terms, to me anyway, Connor, it comes down to two forces, two opposite forces. On the one hand, you have globalism and the globalists who hate the nation state.
Okay.
And this is, at least on the ground, it is informed by a several groups that on the surface seem to be diametrically opposed, but they are convenient allies for the moment because their main objective is to destroy the nation state. And
okay.
So you have this kind of a strange alliance, groups on the left, even some on the far right. But it is being this mindset of globalism is good, is embraced by cultural Marxists. And this is being inculcated, young people in the schools at a very early age, where they'll, for example, now listen, full, cards on the table, full disclosure, I'm not a big fan of international type organizations like the United Nations. I think we should have a seat at the table, but I'm not a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have things like celebrating United Nations Day, and they celebrate international type organizations. Over and above, for example, celebrating their own nation's achievements.
Mm-hmm.
So globalism in all its, you know, ramifications over the nation state. And that, to me, is the great divide.
Well,
which side are you on? I'm on the side of the nation state because I think it's best suited to provide
for our needs and our happiness.
Yeah, that
it's
was
not
going
perfect.
Into my next question. Like, because for many years, I mean, I'm only 19 right now, but even as young as like 14, I was listening to Alex Jones, and something that I never heard, I've always heard this word globalism tossed around, and I've always had a negative connotation with it. Now, definitely, I'm not coming out in support of it, but one thing I've never heard necessarily addressed is why globalism would be a bad thing. And if you could explain that to me, that'd be awesome, because I've never heard that addressed specifically why it would
right.
be bad.
Well, there are some aspects of globalism which, you know, are not horrendous. The idea that, from a strictly economic point, that capital hates barriers. Capital hates boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so globalists want to bring down trade barriers, which isn't always a bad thing. So that aspect of it is okay. But if you push it to its extreme, where you totally erode borders and you have areas where, you know, regulations are sort of homogeneous from one area to the next, you erode the sovereignty. So, for example, here in Canada, we have a parliament. But our parliament can be overruled by GATT, the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs. So our parliament loses sovereignty. Even our Supreme Court could be overruled by this tribunal that adjudicates over general agreements on trades and tariffs. This is a globalist body that wants free trade the world over. And, I mean, there are many examples where countries – I mean, we have a flag, we have a parliament, we have all the trappings of a nation state, but we really aren't a nation state. Look at countries in the European Union. They don't even control their own monetary policy.
Mm-hmm.
They are being dictated to by unelected bureaucrats in Brussels. And the European Union is kind of a prime example of sort of a globalist scheme. If you think your government is in Washington, D.C. or the state capital in Louisiana is distant and unresponsive, think how much more unresponsive it would be to your needs if we had a one-world government situated in The Hague or in Zurich.
Right. I've heard that issue with it, essentially that the further away the seat of power is, that the less likely your needs are to be met. So, essentially, too, the point that you're making is that globalism, too, would make the rich richer as well, because of, like, free trade?
It certainly benefits certain corporations that have no allegiance to a nation state. I think a corporation should be loyal to a nation state and to the workers that it employs in a particular jurisdiction. So certain corporations love the idea of globalization. They don't want boundaries to either labor or capital. Listen, I hope you'll call again, Connor. Thank you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
All right, for those of you we didn't get to, my apologies. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is next with our Paranormal News Roundup, and we'll do the big reveal on What's in the Box.
Don't be afraid of the dark. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To talk to Richard, call 416-360-0740. Or toll free 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. When in doubt, blame the government. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
All right. Just ahead of Rosemary Ellen Guiley, very quickly, we're going to do the reveal on our What's in the Box segment, our remote viewing experiment. And let's see. Ian, you said vegetable matter, something green. And Albert said that it's a banana. And Ryan said it's something dry, like a fossil or a starfish. Nobody close on that count. And let's see, what do we have here on the live chat? Darth Bader said the box contains something made of milk. Quibbit Nano says weed. Todd Chadwick is guessing lip gloss. Blah Blah Tuesday says it's a cigar. And Gord Oland said a tan belt. And then Quibit Nano, who seems to have one thing on the mind, now says it's a hemp belt. Let me see. I don't know if I can get into my Twitter here in a hurry. Let me see. Dagnabbit. Okay. Let's see. What do we have on Twitter? And you can use the hashtag hashtag TCS remote. Ross says something to do with the cold, a snow globe. And let's see. What else do we have? A granola bar, says Aaron. And, that's it. Something pet-related. Pet-related. I don't know what that means. Something to do with a pet. Could be anything. Well, we really didn't have anyone that was close, I don't think. Here's what we have. It's a Toronto Maple Leaf alarm clock. I don't know. What do you think? Is snow globe? Snow globe is not really close, is it? No. No. You had sort of the general shape, I suppose. But Toronto Maple Leaf clock. All right. Thank you for playing. We'll try again next week. All right. Let's get into it with our dear, dear friend, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She joins us once a month as we go through some paranormal news. She's a leading expert in the metaphysical paranormal fields with more than 60 books published on a wide range of paranormal, spiritual, mystical topics, including 9 single-volume encyclopedias and reference works. Her current work focuses on interdimensional entity contact experiences, problem haunting, spirit and entity attachments. Her website is visionaryliving.com. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, Richard. Well, I'm trying to stay warm here. We're having an incredible cold snap, and I think I came back from Arizona too soon.
Yeah, likewise. It's I'm hoping that this is the death rattle of winter, its last gasp.
It better be, but it's giving me some good time to stay indoors and get a lot of writing done. I'm working on some paranormal travel stories.
Ah, all right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing those published. So much going on in the paranormal vein. This story caught my eye recently. I remember a couple of years ago, there was an airport in China that was shut down after multiple UFO sightings. They literally shut the airport down. Now the same thing has happened in Peru last week. A dozen UFOs suspended flights at the Jorge Chavez Airport. What do you know? What do you hear?
Not much beyond that, but it's a credible sighting and a credible story, and it's something that we see happen from time to time in airports all around the world. And we've had a number of sightings like that here in America. There was a big one in 206 over Chicago involving a single craft. We've had craft sighted recently within the past year in the Phoenix Airport. It doesn't surprise me that if we have alien intelligences who are interested in examining people and especially our technology, it would make sense that they would drop in on our airports. So we haven't had much follow-up on this Peru story other than the characteristics of it are similar to sightings that have occurred at other airports. And of course, officially, there's never any explanation of. Here in America, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, tends to deny these sorts of things. There's usually some natural explanation put forward as how this was a mistaken identity sort of thing. But it happens too often to be attributed to that.
Well, you're right. You mentioned Chicago, the O'Hare UFO incident, and I spoke to the reporter at the Chicago Trib who covered that story. The most clicked story on their online version of the newspaper in the history of the newspaper, but no photographs, some eyewitness testimony, but it was very hush-hush with the United Airlines pilot or staff. But here in Peru, we've got photographs, we've got a radar. This is a flotilla. This is a dozen craft, and there they are hovering above the airport, and it shuts it down. We'll come back, much to discuss still, with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, part of our Paranormal News Roundup. Stay with us.
When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard live, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Curiosity, or did the devil make you do it? Whatever the reason, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To talk to Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Rosemary Ellen Guiley is with us, our paranormal investigator, researcher, great friend of the program, and it's that time of the month for our Paranormal News Roundup. We're going to dial back to 1973, and I was a big Jackie Gleason fan. I remember the Honeymooners, which were, of course, in reruns. The program aired, obviously, well before my time, but it lives forever in reruns. One of the classic characters, Ralph Cramden. Many of listeners will remember, of course, Jackie Gleason from the Smokey and the Bandits movie, and he became, you know, famous to an entirely new generation. But many people may not be familiar with this story, Rosemary, and this goes back to 1973. Jackie Gleason and his golfing buddy, then President Richard Nixon, supposedly, according to Gleason's, I think it was his second wife, Miss McKittrick, Beverly McKittrick, claims that Gleason and Nixon one night traipsed off to the Homestead Air Force Base in Florida, because Gleason lived in Florida, to visit on the base and see some dead alien bodies. And, of course, this has sort of perplexed ufologists for years. Is it true? Is it not? I don't know if we're ever going to get to the bottom of this one, but what do you make of this story? Did Jackie Gleason see alien bodies?
I'm very suspicious of this story, and it keeps going around in ufology with people coming down on it on both sides. He did or he didn't. But there's just too many suspicious things about it, Richard. For one thing, the idea that a president of the United States is going to sneak off with a friend and go to an Air Force base to look at alien bodies without Secret Service or anybody knowing is just too far out of the question. And even though people who believe in this story jump to say that, well, it was known that Nixon made comments about he would like to get away from his Secret Service, and one of the Secret Service men who was working at the time published something later that they were warned that Nixon might try to do that. But we don't have anything on record that he ever got away from his constant Secret Service guard. And if he had, that would have been a huge story, even huger than aliens, a president to be out of protection from the Secret Service. And if he did do it and it got covered up, that's a cover-up worthy of Watergate itself. So I'm suspicious just on that alone. But it makes for a great story. You know,
they go
golfing, then this impromptu drive down to Homestead to look at these aliens, and some description of the aliens. I mean, Gleason told his second wife, Beverly, that they were kind of decomposed and kind of withered up, and they were small and gray. They had big heads, sort of sounds like the grays we're familiar with from the media. Now, he was fascinated by UFOs and space travel and alien visitations. So, you know, people aren't surprised about that, that Gleason would want to see some proof of alien bodies, but I don't think he did. I think it's maybe he told it as a joke on his wife. Maybe he never intended for it to get circulated around like it has been. But it's a story that just won't die.
Yeah, I don't know that we ever heard this story from any other source other than Gleason's second wife, Beverly McKittrick. And so, as you say, she's not lying necessarily. She's repeating the story exactly as Gleason probably told her. The problem is, or not the problem, but odds are he was telling it as a joke, I guess.
That's my conclusion, and mainly just because the circumstances are just too outrageous to have taken place.
Right. For a private citizen to have access that way, you're right. It does stretch credulity, to say the least. Interesting story in the Daily Mirror in London, England, and this is actually caught on video. If people go, well, I'll get Albert to post this to the carousel up at strangeplanet.ca and the radio page. We have a police officer running in terror from a house after a poltergeist supposedly threw a 15-centimeter knife at them, narrowly missing an officer. And I'm just looking, I don't see a dateline on this, but I think it was in South America, wasn't it?
It was in Chile. And I did look at the video. I didn't see police running in terror, but there were certainly a lot of them going in and out of this house, and it looked like lights were going on and off, which would be another poltergeist effect. And it's a plausible story. In fact, in the literature of poltergeist cases, extreme poltergeist cases where things are thrown, and especially dangerous objects like nails and broken glass and knives and things like that, those kinds of cases are on record. And most of them, oddly, come out of South America. And some of them have never really been debunked in terms of hoaxing. So it's based on the literature and what we know about poltergeist cases, this story possibly has some credibility. What's lacking from the news report is the background. Now, the family said they were terrified. They weren't in the house. They left the house. They didn't want to go back. They thought somebody should come and exorcise it. But we don't have the backstory. Does the family involve a teenager, for example? Because a lot of times these cases do center around teenagers. Were they involved in any kind of occult activity? Was this something that they had experienced before, like a spirit that might be attached to someone in the family? And so I'd like to know more about the background of this case, because the description of things being thrown through the air, very believable.
Yes, and then to have police officials on site and sort of corroborating this gives it even more authenticity. It reminds me of, now you're in Connecticut, it reminds me of the Bridgeport poltergeist on Lindley Street, where many police officers showed up and corroborated. They saw things flying all over the place.
Yes, and we've had parapsychologists and scientists even investigate some of these poltergeist cases and witness those sorts of things as well. So these are real cases, and this might be added to the literature.
Have you been to the house in Bridgeport? It's sort of heralded as the world's most haunted house.
I have not, I have read about it. A new book came out just a couple of years ago on that house and documented an incredible history of activity. It's a place that I don't know if it's off limits now to investigations or not.
All right. Poltergeist throwing knives, again, we go to the Daily Mirror. It's such it's a treasure trove of these sorts of stories. They cover them so well over there in Great Britain. And this is a story of a 23-year-old filmed, laughing maniacally, writhing, and even trying to bite an exorcist. It appears they have caught on videotape. It's an alleged demonic possession. This young man is hissing like a wild animal, baring his teeth as an exorcist attempts to rid him of his demons. What do you make of this video?
It's definitely plausible, and I did watch the video. The young man does act like people who are under the influence of something. He does not appear to be acting. And individuals who are possessed, they do exactly what he does, writhe, make odd sounds, hiss, moan, their eyes roll, their faces get contorted. People have to hold them down because they become very agitated and even exhibit supernormal strength. And the story behind him is that he became very, very depressed after the death of his father. And sometimes when individuals go into states of deep depression, depending on what else is going on in their lives, they can become vulnerable to spirit influence. A full-blown possession is a rather unusual outcome of that, but It's technically possible. Now, a lot of people have criticized this story and the video, saying, oh, he's acting. But I think they're comparing this to what they see in Hollywood, which is never what you get in real life. Real-life possessions are never as dramatic as something like The Exorcist or the Exorcism of Emily Rose, you know, films like that. So at the end of this exorcism, the young man appears very shaken but calmed. And depending upon his situation, that might be it, or he might need further treatment.
Well, it's interesting. This story is also from Chile. So we had the poltergeist incident in Chile, this one in Chile, and then we had the UFO, the flotilla, shutting down the airport at Jorge Chavez Airport in Peru. So
Things are hopping down there. You need
to get down there and find out what is going on, Rosemary.
I'm all for it. It's probably warmer down there than it is here.
no doubt. These stories fascinate me. I love stories about ghost ships and now ghost planes. There's a plane that some people have claimed to have seen appear as a ghostly apparition, and it looks like sort of a vintage World War II plane, like a twin prop, kind of a transport carrier or a bomber. It's similar to what they call a Douglas Dakota. This ghost plane, what can you tell me about it?
This is in Derbyshire, and the area around Derbyshire has had a number of plane crashes over the decades, and people have blamed it on magnetic anomalies. They say that it's an area like the Bermuda Triangle. But nonetheless, this is a kind of residual haunting because there was a plane that crashed there and about 70 years ago, and this is in keeping with other residual World War II airplane activity that's reported around England at some of the old RAF abandoned airfields where there are still sounds of airplanes taking off and landing and apparitions of people and sounds of people who were working in the facilities. And this is a ghost plane that people have seen on a number of occasions over a period of years, flying very low and erratically and silently. And they anticipate a crash in a field, and none comes. The plane just kind of disappears. And that's exactly what happened to the airplane that did crash. It crashed into a field that where people think the ghost plane crashes today. So it's a great story, and it has plenty of company in the UK with other kinds of World War II era ghost planes and airfields.
That's maybe that's could be the subject of your next book. You got to get a hightail over there and put something on paper about these ghost planes, because it's a fascinating area. Rosemary, we are out of time. Always a pleasure. And let me remind listeners, the website, visionaryliving.com. Go to her bookstore, and like I said, like 60-plus titles. It's incredible. Always a pleasure, Rosemary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richard. Good night.
Good night. My thanks to Ian and Albert and Ryan and all of you listening at home. Back next week with a brand new program. Hope you'll be along for that. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed, and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.